Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show. Today, we're going to talk about the Columbia River. The Columbia River, that big, giant, lake-like thing at the north end of Oregon, which most people think of as a very, 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 very large, but not particularly interesting river. Most people are dead wrong, but they would never have been fooled in such a way 50 years ago. Maybe more like 75. The Columbia River was a wild, frothy, dangerous place once. It was known for spectacular scenery. Well, it's known, still known for spectacular scenery. It was known for phenomenal fishing, which, unfortunately, not so much anymore. But we've traded that for a placid lake-like waterway and cheap hydroelectric power, and this is how it happened. This story was first published on September 6th, 2010. Here we go. If you first encountered the Columbia River Gorge sometime after 1957, chances are that you think of the river that runs through the middle of it as being like a big, long lake. And that's more or less what it is today. It impresses with its bigness, but it's no Mississippi. In places, its current is swift, but it's nothing you can't make good progress against in a canoe. Other than the scenery rising from each bank, it doesn't appear particularly remarkable. Just a big river, that's all. But the Columbia River wasn't always so tame. There was a time, when all the water in this, America's fourth largest river, cascaded through stony slits and roared through a 40-foot rocky gap before it reached the quieter stretch from Portland to Astoria. It was wild, it was turbulent, and it was as dangerous to boaters as Niagara Falls. Salmon swarmed upstream each year, dashing themselves against the rocks in a struggle to get upstream. Native Americans stood on platforms that hung out over the rocks, platforms that looked rickety and dangerous but did not flex or move so much as an inch under their weight, and scooped big fish out of the river with dip nets. They had been doing this for time out of mind. That was the river Lewis and Clark encountered in 1806, and the central point of that river was Celilo Falls, just east of what's now the Dalles. Celilo Falls was the epicenter of the oldest continuously inhabited human settlement in North America. Every year, millions of migrating salmon made the living easy. Although dipnet fishing was fraught with hazards, starvation was not one of them. The change in the river started in 1937, when Bonneville Dam was created in part to flood the torrential rapids by the town of Cascade Locks. But the watershed year was 1957. That was the year Celilo Falls disappeared beneath the surface of what is today called Celilo Lake, a reservoir backed up behind the Dalles Dam. The decision to flood the falls was surprisingly uncontroversial by modern standards. Mostly it came down to the Native American tribes that lived and fished at the falls, fighting to stop progress, as they would say in the day. The tribes had international law on their side, a treaty that let them fish at the falls, but it wasn't enough. Each tribe member ended up getting a lump sum cash buyout, roughly equivalent to the value of a new Cadillac, and they watched sadly as their falls disappeared under 30 feet of still water. Why was the government so keen to do this? Well, regardless of appearances, the Columbia really is an extraordinary river. A full one-third of North America's hydroelectric power generating potential is on the main stem Columbia River. It has an unusual combination of A, enormous volume, five times that of the Colorado River, B, rapid elevation drop, and C, steep banks so that the impoundments behind dams don't spread out as far. Plus, it's relatively wild and unsettled, meaning fewer people have to be paid off through condemnation proceedings when their property is flooded. Hydroelectric projects at Grand Coulee and Bonneville created enough electricity during World War II to have a noticeable impact on America's war effort. And after the war, the country's standard of living was rising fast and was all powered by electricity, generated either expensively at coal-fired plants or cheaply by dams on America's big rivers. Once Celilo was underwater and the Dalles Dam started generating power, it put out an enormous amount. Although comparison with the rate of electric power consumption in the U.S. makes it look less impressive than it is. According to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the dam's powerhouse generates enough to satisfy the power needs of two cities the size of Portland, whose population figure is just over 575,000. So the dam produces roughly 0.3% of the electricity needs of the entire country. Of course, that's power that would have to be generated in other ways, probably by burning coal, if there were no dam at the Dalles. But Celilo Falls was unique. There was nothing like it on the face of the earth, and now it's gone. Was it a good trade? It's at least a question worth considering. Well, that's it for our show for today. This show is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. In addition to this podcast, it includes a weekly newspaper column, a daily RSS feed to catch on your smartphone reader, a Facebook page, a Twitter feed, and a couple other minor components. Photographs and other images that go with today's show are on offbeatoregon.com, where you'll also find full citations to the sources used in writing this story, along with more than 200 other articles written over the last 5 years, all organized by date of publication. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and was written by Carmen Ficarra. I do Offbeat Oregon for learning and for fun, so I don't sell advertising or ask for donations, but if you feel a need to make a donation anyway, may I suggest that you buy a copy of my book instead? It's called Wicked Portland, The Wild and Lusty Underworld of a Frontier Seaport Town, published by the History Press in 2012. You can order it from the store link on offbeatoregon.com if you'd like, but if you still have a local community bookstore in your town, I hope you'll consider buying it from them instead. It sells for $20. Finally, if you're ever in Corvallis, drop me a line. Maybe we can grab a cup of coffee and talk about history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com. Don't be a stranger, especially don't be a stranger if you have a good idea for one of these columns in the future. Speaking of the future, our next show will be coming your way at around 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And until then, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.